What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners. What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners.
Hi everyone, this is Isaac from IlluminatiWatcher.com. This is the first of two intros to this podcast. This is an intro I made after the fact because I realized after production that this show will have to be forced into two parts because of the length. So this will be part one of two. The second part will come out a few weeks after the first one. So just to alleviate any confusion, that's what's going on. Hello everyone, this is Isaac from IlluminatiWatcher.com. You are listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. Now today, I am not going to be having a guest. Instead, I will be providing you the audio from a show I was on with Groovy Bean. Groovy Bean is hosted by Yvonne Palermo. And on this episode, I was joined by the great Jim Nichols. And on it, we talk about all the things you have come to expect to hear. We talk about a wide range of topics from ancient Egyptian occult beliefs, Nazi theosophists, channeling spirits, Stanley Kubrick and the Kubrick's Code, and basically the overall common thread we see in entertainment with the occult belief systems, stuff we've seen like child abuse, hijacking the positive energy from humanity in order to feed these archon demons, initiations, symbolism, Rihanna's anti-initiation, mind control breakdowns, and of course, we can't talk about this subject without a little bit of Aleister Crowley. Now, Groovy Bean was kind enough to let me borrow or use the audio from this interview. You can pick up her show on HaggyShack.com, WolfSpiritRadio.com, or even her latest network, the Paranormal Into the Night Network. I suggest you take a listen to her show. She's got a lot of the stuff we've been talking about that you've been seeing on IlluminatiWatcher.com. I think you're going to enjoy it. Before we get into the show, I want to do a little bit of updates on what I've been doing. As most of you know, I've been redoing all of my books in the Audible audiobook format. Now, this is wildly popular to have the authors narrate the books, so I've been doing them. And I've only got Kubrick's Code left. I'm still debating on whether I should do that one or not because it's really image intensive as far as getting the point across. But I did just finish Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, which is my most popular work. That's about the hip-hop conspiracy and how rap music is being used in occult symbols in order to hijack a certain energy from its listeners. I've got a couple really cool videos coming out on the Illuminati Watcher 1 YouTube channel. Just Google search for Illuminati Watcher 1, the number 1, and you should see it on there. And on it, you'll see various videos I've got going. I've got these new cool little videos where I'm going to be trying to get ancient alien clips, amongst others. Problem is, when I upload the videos, YouTube generally kicks them back if I provide the full video clip. So I've been trying to take just the audio only with images spliced out. But that kind of sucks. I don't prefer watching them that way, so I'm sure you don't as well. So I'm going to try to upload some of these and figure out a way around the system so they stop banning them. So I've been working on that. I've got another couple shows coming up this summer. Stay tuned on IlluminatiWatcher.com for more on that. Subscribe to that email newsletter and you can catch all the latest shows that I'll be on, or maybe if I could ever get my stuff together, I can get some guests on this podcast you're listening to right now. It's a busy summer, though, so that's more excuses. Anyways, without further ado, here's the show you came to listen for. This is The Groovy Bean Show. Thanks for listening.
The gin joints in all the towns in all the world, and she walks into mine. They call her Groovy Bean. But she's not just some dame. She's Yvonne Palermo. She does one of them shows on Haggy Shack Radio. So play it again, Sam. Yvonne, he is looking at you, kid.
Salutations and good evening, Haggy Shack Radio listeners. You have just arrived in Groovy Bean territory, the place where seeds grow. We spark change, all us beans here to feed the planet. I am your host, Yvonne Palermo, and thank you for tuning in tonight and joining me on the Groovy Bean journey. It's time to kick off your shoes and dig those toes into Gaia, pour some lavender iced tea goodness, and keep an ear out for those Bigfoot hollers as we dive into another two-hour show coming to you from the Cascadia Mountains. So, tell your friends, pass on the word, and let's get our awakened family growing. Groovy Bean is every Friday night at 6 p.m. Tonight's show is produced by Haggy Shack Radio, lovely Miss Colleen Kelly behind the scenes, who's snacking on her nutty gzutty health bar, www.haggyshack.com. And tonight's music is by Emma Gold. FullDisclosureNow.com want to be a part of the movement? Check it out on 1111, folks. Holy social media pants. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, give it a like, Instagram, and YouTube at Groovy Bean, spelled GROOVIEBEAN. My website is a .com now, folks. Woohoo! GroovyBean.com. There you can find the upcoming list of shows as well. Tonight's show, friends out there in Haggy Shack land, yeah, it's pre-recorded. It was the only way to grab our groovy guest today, but feel free to discuss in the chat as you listen. Last but not least, we are a donation station, the Sheep Don't Sleep, here in Haggy's house. So if you like what you hear and you want more of it, show the Babylonian lovey-doveys. Click that donate link and follow through. Now, special shout out to Nancy and Walt for the Shungite goodness. Check out their website at www.cosmicreality.net. There you can find all your Shungite glorious needs. Did you know that Haggy Shack has a show schedule? What? Say it isn't so. Yes, it is. Just check it out. The day's show is just a click away. Now, friends, tonight we have a recurring bean on the show. Yes, we do. Mr. Jim Nichols, UFO researcher, illustrator. He will be speaking at MUFON next month, June 25th in Tempe, Arizona. His website is jimnicholsufo.net. His favorite video is Atlantis Rising, which can be found on his website video blog. Again, jimnicholsufo.net. Now, my friends, tonight's guest, very special guest we have tonight. I am so honored to have him on. We have Isaac Weisthaupt, website publisher of IlluminatiWatcher.com, author and independent researcher. Isaac has been on the leading edge of conspiracy theories surrounding the elusive Illuminati. Oh, those naughty biscuits that they are. And its infiltration of the entertainment industry. Using examples of familiar pop culture and works of entertainment, Isaac has been speaking and writing about the occult from a unique perspective that seeks to understand the big agenda while helping others along the way. Isaac has been featured a featured guest on Richard C. Hoagland's Other Side of Midnight, Sirius XM's The All Out Show, The Higher Side Chats, Freeman Flies the Free Zone, Mark Devlin's Good Vibrations, and many more radio shows and podcasts. His fresh perspective and openly admitted imperfections promotes the rational approach to exploring these taboo subjects and conspiracy theories. Now, folks, listen, I want you to go to Isaac's website. It's www.IlluminatiWatcher.com. And I'm going to spell that for you because I know we have some new listeners to the word Illuminati. It's IlluminatiWatcher. He does have published books too, folks. Yes, he does. We have A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, the Illuminati, Ancient Aliens and Pop Culture, Sacrifice, Magic Behind the Mic, Kubrick's Code Project, yeah, no joke, Alice in Rocky Horrorland, Entertainment's Pursuit of the Transhuman Desert Apocalypse. So listen, folks, it is time to bring on in Jim Nichols and Isaac Weishaupt. Please come on in, fellas.
Hello.
Hello, Isaac. How are you?
Oh, hi, great. Yvonne.
Hello, Jim Nichols. So good to have you both on this evening. I'm very excited about the show. And I have to tell you, one of the biggest things here, Isaac, for me too, is you stated in your bio how you like to help others. And I have to tell you gracious thanks. Upon my awakened journey, a year ago, well, little under a year actually, is you were one of the first websites I found, and completely, and no pun here, we can all giggle with it, completely eye-opening. So I just again want to thank you because I am honored to have you both on as well, and I'm just so excited about the show. So how are you both doing?
I'm doing very well. That was a very nice intro you gave me there, and I am honored as well to be on your show and to hear that I had some kind of influence on you. That's what my whole aim is to keep things like a simple gateway drug into looking into a lot of these conspiracies by providing some kind of graspable, question mark as to our entertainment, because I feel like most of us can understand some of the more basic ideas and, you know, go from there as to how deep people want to look into things. I feel like it's better just to cast that wide net and try to resonate some of these ideas, where instead of having people scoff at the allegations of the Illuminati, I'd like them to actually consider it and take a look at the evidence, because like many others, once you start looking into it, you realize that it is all unfortunately true.
Yeah, it's like a holy crap holy moment. You're just like, Jesus, what is going on here? And I want to thank you for doing this service for everybody, because that is what this is. So again, folks, tuning in, www.IlluminatiWatcher.com. Now, how you doing, Mr. Nichols?
Very good. Thank you. And thank you again so much, Yvonne, for having me join you. It's always a delight to to join you and kick around these interesting ideas and theories and so forth.
Absolutely. So, friends, where would you like to start? Do you want to start with the history of the Naughty Biscuits, the Illuminati?
Yeah, I think that'd be best.
All right.
Especially if some of your listeners are new to this concept.
We do. Yes, we will have some new listeners. So please, take us in. Take us in.
Well, I can give you my angle on it, and then I'd love to hear Jim's angle on it, because this is one of the more kind of shadowy realms where we try to pin down the idea of this Illuminati group, and the reason why it's so hard to pin down and point a finger and say, well, this is the guy. It's because they stay concealed from the light. And in my research, I believe the Illuminati is a long line of people who have tried to garner knowledge of, esoteric hidden knowledge from these dark sort of occult forces. And this knowledge is supposedly various things, one of which is the enlightenment of mankind and trying to pursue the idea of self-deification, of a man becoming a god in his own right. Mm-hmm. And this knowledge was handed down through all of these ancient mystery schools in today's secret societies, which we know of as like the Freemasons, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily that the Illuminati are a group that meets up, but it's more of a belief system, and some people subscribe to it, and some people subscribe to pieces of it, and they don't even realize that they are, which is my chief concern, is that our entertainment is leading everyone to believe in these same ideas.
Right.
So that would be, you know, that would be kind of like the rough idea of who is the Illuminati. It's more of what is the Illuminati, and mm-hmm. when you research what the Illuminati is and what they believe, you find out that we might all be a little bit Illuminati.
Mm. Mr. Nichols is chomping at the bit. Yes.
Chomp, chomp, chomp.
Let him in.
That's kind of a nutshell approach to it. I think it's something that actually started out very positive, though. I think that I've been reading Manly P. Hall's book about the history of secret societies, and of course, Manly P. Hall was a 33rd degree Freemason, and he's, you know, the original intent was really to enlighten humans to discover the God within us, and not so much to become gods, but to liberate us from the illusion of material reality. But unfortunately, these teachings get taken over by ego. And on one level, the teachings can be very liberating and very spiritually uplifting. But it's like, you know, it's like the Force in Star Wars. It has a good side and a dark side. Mm-hmm. And if you use it for your own personal ego gratification, it can become very dark. So it becomes dark black magic sorcery. And I think that Illuminati, as we understand it today, is very ego-driven, and it's obsessed with control and power. And sadly, that's the very dark, dark side of the Force. Mm-hmm. But it's got a yin and a yang. It can be used for positive or negative. And unfortunately, we're seeing it totally dominated by negative right now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you brought up the Star Wars movie there, because that I was reading somebody's interpretation of the Star Wars was the Egyptian mythology through mm-hmm. Star Wars with, was it Episode 4, Obi-Wan Kenobi, who represents Osiris. Darth Vader, who represented Set, right? Mm-hmm. And Luke Skywalker represented Horus. Yoda represented Ra, the primary Egyptian sun god.
Oh, really?
So, very interesting little thing that you brought that up. It just reminded me of that, so I just thought I'd toss that in there.
Yeah, that Star Wars is interesting as well. That's, you know, that whole... I don't know if you've seen some of those articles that I've written about the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life. It's again part of the supposed Illuminati kind of indoctrination system, is this secret teachings of the Kabbalah. And within it, you've got this Tree of Life, which represents the 10 emanations from God. And each one has its own sort of principle and value. And if a practitioner decides to follow up this Tree of Life, they can kind of learn each aspect of themselves. And I agree with Jim's assessment on the Illuminati. That's a great way of putting it. It's a lot of this stuff is very liberating, and like a lot of the New Age beliefs, you know, I studied that stuff for a while, and that was very, very empowering. I found it to be very good stuff. But then when you look deeper into it, some of that stuff does lead you to a dark side. And that's what happens in the Kabbalah Tree of Life when you try to cross through this this area they call the abyss in the center, which is got a hidden realm called Daat, D-A-A-T, sometimes spelled D-A-A-T-H. So that's where we might get Darth Vader, Daat Vader. He's the abyss, the dark side. So, very interesting stuff.
That is.
Well, also, according to certain Masonic traditions, they were able to access an extraterrestrial entity or extra-dimensional entity who was called Yoda.
Oh, you're kidding me.
So who was called Yoda? And he was like a little dwarf kind of character or creature. And so it's like, I would say George Lucas somewhere along the line had really done some deep occult research to come up with the Star Wars mythology.
So let me backtrack for a second, because we were talking about the Tree of Life. Isaac, you brought up the Tree of Life. And do you think, so from somebody who's just learning, and you know how everybody's, you know, awakening and becoming more aware of different symbologies and sacred geometry and the Tree of Life itself. I've seen a few people wearing them on t-shirts and stuff. So for somebody that's just tuning in and going, oh, wait, I'm wearing one of these shirts. What am I wearing? Is this what? So what would you say to somebody like that?
Well, I think you can, you know, use it for good or bad. Mm-hmm. Yes. But it seems to me that a lot of this stuff, when you boil it down to the root, you'll find that it's a lot of the same aspects that we find from the other occult teachings, where there's this idea of channeling extraterrestrials and, you know, out of body entities and all this stuff. And when you look at the Tree of Life, there's the one that we all know of. And then there's like this dark side of the Tree of Life, which is the hidden shadow side.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you'll find the Klepoth, which are these demons.
Mm.
So you can get so far on the, you know, the light side of the Tree of Life, but you can also traverse the dark side to the Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And any initiate should know that they need to take part of both and need to embrace both sides of that, the good and the bad, the light and the dark, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. So to me, it seems like if you are okay with exposing yourself to these dark forces that have much more power than we understand, I mean, go for it. But I wouldn't necessarily try to do it myself.
Right.
You know, exposing yourself to that level of energy or evil demonic spirits seems dangerous in and of itself. So.
Well, yeah.
Well, especially in our culture, because we have no concept of that, and we have no training to even be aware of it. Mm-hmm. So to go dabbling into this stuff, like you see so many, you know, Hollywood stars and so forth, it's like it's become real campy to play around with this stuff, mm-hmm. and they have no idea how dangerous it is until it's too late.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Speaking of the entertainment stuff. In that hip-hop conspiracy book I wrote, that's part of the chief argument I have, is that these rappers, these musicians, mm-hmm. they are channeling different spirits. Some of them, it's the goddess spirit, the goddess archetype of Isis, which is what we see from Beyonce when she mm-hmm. talks about how she channels this Sasha Fierce entity.
Yes.
And then later she said that she killed Sasha Fierce and then merged it with this other spirit called Yonce. And people think that it's kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, kind of part of the show, but it's mm-hmm. it's really not when you see so many of these artists are doing it. They all seem to have these alter egos. You know, Beyonce's got a few. Jay-Z, he talks about getting possessed by the spirits. And these are all like interviews you can find on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just saw a few, what was that, Kanye, I don't know what he was doing on that video, but,
mm-hmm.
yeah, before we jump into that, because before we talk about the channeling spirits here, would it be okay if we backtrack a bit to where all this, you know, for me, one of the things that was important for me to learn was the roots of this evil. Where Aleister Crowley and where Aleister Crowley came from, and those, could we talk about that a little bit? Because I do know what the new listeners, you know, when those names come up, I think it's very important for them to know who are these people.
Most definitely, yeah. Aleister Crowley's he's the guy that sort of changed things and made. I mean, there's always been a following of these occult beliefs over time. Aleister Crowley seems to be the most recent, maybe modern day kind of, person that was able to successfully motivate the masses to try this kind of stuff out. And that's why you see his likeness on, the beat. Most people know, like, he's on the Beatles album cover. Mm-hmm. He's on the back of the Doors album, 13. Mm-hmm. He's, Led Zeppelin is fascinated by him. Jimmy Page bought one of his houses and so on and so forth. So who is Aleister Crowley? And I know Jim wrote some pretty interesting articles about him, so I'd like to hear his take on it as well. But Crowley's he's the wickedest man alive, is what they called him. And what he was he was a Victorian era, late 1800s, mm-hmm. early 1900s, infamous occultist and ceremonial magician. And what's fascinating is that this guy, he was born into a family with money, so he didn't really go through the same kind of struggles that most people do. And he had lots of time on his hands. So he proceeded to accelerate at a high rate of speed through all of these ceremonial magic orders, like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn or the Ordo Templi Orientis. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the reason why he was kind of raised to the he kind of went through the ranks so quick was because he was channeling these spirits with ease that most of these mm-hmm. occultists were trying to do, and he seemed to be more successful than most. And he was able to channel this spirit called Awas, mm-hmm. which he mm-hmm. interpreted as Lucifer. And this Awas character dictated the book of the law, is what he called it, that he wrote. Mm-hmm. And this book is used as it's basically the Bible of Crowley's religion, called Thelema. And Thelema means will. Mm-hmm. And you'll see the concept of the true will in modern day. It's playing out today. You know, Aleister Crowley was the one that coined that term, true will. And we've seen it kind of pushed by different, occultist over time, like the guy that wrote the Alchemist, Paulo Coelho. Mm-hmm. Paulo Coelho's book, The Alchemist, his main character, Santiago, the whole book is about him pursuing his personal legend. And what that is that's his true will. So,
which is, okay, let's cut to the chase here. It's ego. it's like, yeah, right. No, this is sorcery. He called it will or thelema, whatever, but it's just ego. And their obsession is control over other people, for one thing, and control over physical matter. Mm. Which is, it's part of the deal. And once you learn the secrets of Kabbalistic magic, mm-hmm. Then you can exercise your will. Your will does have control to a certain degree over the very fabric of space time, which is, which is ultimately the obsession of, the human species all throughout history. To have complete control equal to that of God. Mm-hmm. And that's what, that's what Crowley was all about. And, he was a master of Kabbalistic teachings and Kabbalistic magic. And if you, the book of the law, he talks about will. Mm-hmm. And, that's all ego. And actually, it was interesting that Adolf Hitler was very much enamored of, Aleister Crowley. And Hitler demonstrated the power of his will in launching World War II and his absolute control over taking over France, Poland, Czechoslovakia. That was actually an expression of Aleister Crowley Thelema, that I can have this kind of power over my reality.
The triumph of the will, yeah?
Yep. Mm.
Yeah, and then speaking of, you make a good point. It boils down to becoming a god on earth. And there's mm-hmm. a story, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but I've heard it, that Crowley and another man were walking down the sidewalk.
Yes.
The other man did not believe that Crowley had these kind of powers that he was claiming, so Crowley all of a sudden kind of started limping really hard on his leg. And the guy, and then he said, look at the guy in front of us that was walking, and that guy all of a sudden started limping the same way. So supposedly, he's
yeah. And then at one point,
this.
He actually fell down, and he got the guy to fall down.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's very interesting the ideas that seem to work out for this guy, and I believe that a lot of the stuff he claimed really worked out for him, like the idea that he channeled this alien named Lamb. You know, I believe it all happened.
Do you think that Lamb was a gray?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at him, he's got that, you know, elongated sort of skull and the bug eyes and the kind of narrow chin and all that. So,
Do you think that maybe Lamb was created by the Nazis?
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting idea. Well, Lamb was actually there before. I think he was like 1918 is when Crowley channeled him, if I'm not mistaken.
So let me ask this: who taught Crowley?
Crowley learned by, he was reading a lot. He was in all those ceremonial magician groups, the OTO, but then eventually Crowley would turn around and teach them.
Okay.
So it seems to me that, you know, Crowley was successful in channeling these spirits that whispered to him, like AWOS, who was, I could be messing up my facts, but I know at one point Crowley, I thought he was dictated, AWOS was actually a kind of a cohort of Horus, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right, Jim?
That was the Aeon of Horus.
Okay.
Crowley married...
Rose.
Edith Rose. What was her name? Anyway, he got married in 1904. And on their honeymoon, he took Rose, his wife, to Cairo, Egypt, where they had a secret ceremony, a private ceremony, inside the Great Pyramid. Or he was trying to contact the gods Isis and Osiris. And the next morning, after they were back in their hotel, first thing in the morning, Rose started to channel these messages from Osiris. And Crowley wasn't sure whether to believe Rose or not, so he took her to the Cairo Museum. And they went through the museum, and they went to this one case called, and it was case number 666. And she pointed to the sculpture that was in the case, and she says, "That's who's talking to me." And it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Horus. And Horus told Horus began to chant, or allegedly, Horus, this entity, whatever it was, started to channel through Crowley, and that's when he channeled the book, the Book of the Law.
Okay,
that's right.
But Crowley was a very gifted adept who had been trained in the Freemasonry and the Ordo Templi Orientis, and he was able to assimilate this stuff so quickly, and it was never enough. He always wanted to keep pushing the barrier, pushing the limits, and so he essentially kind of created his own occult belief system.
I'm going to pop in here and tell the listeners that you are tuned in to Haggy Shack Radio. Welcome, I am Yvonne Palermo. This is Groovy Bean Friday Night. We are joined by our recurring bean, Mr. Jim Nichols. We are talking to our very special guest tonight, Isaac Weishaupt. That's right, www.illuminatiwatcher.com. If you folks want to know the truth and want to wake up and want to learn, that is where you need to go. Now, do not forget, we are a donation station. If you like what you hear and you want more of it and you don't want those sheep to sleep anymore, please donate. And hey, I do have a website, groovybean.com, for our upcoming shows. Now, we're going to pop right back in. We were just discussing Crowley and his wife, Rose. And I wanted to just say, I find it very interesting that Rose was the one that was channeling. And how Crowley kind of jumped on that bandwagon a little bit there. Just saying. So was she channeling because of her female being and her pineal gland?
That's a good question. It kind of blew Crowley's mind because he wasn't, she was not into this stuff at all. She was kind of in a semi-trance when she woke up, and she started channeling this information, and then eventually Crowley himself started to channel.
And I think Crowley, he kind of rotated through women pretty fast.
Yes.
Okay.
I think he was constantly looking for this embodiment of the Whore of Babylon, as he called it, which is the which could be the embodiment of Isis on Earth, the goddess.
Well, which is also interesting, and we can't just leave it with Aleister Crowley, because he became profoundly involved with Jack Parsons, who was the creator of the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California, which eventually blossomed into the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So we have a distinct connection from Aleister Crowley to Jack Parsons to Jet Propulsion Lab, JPL, and NASA.
Oh, geez.
So this is where it gets really crazy.
So can I ask you, though, before we jump to the NASA bit, though, because we just touched on Horus for our listeners, you know, because if they were in Cairo, Rose gets this channeling, Crowley picks up on this, and we're talking about Egyptians here.
Yes.
And we talked about Horus, and we know with symbology how vitally important the Egyptian, the god of the sun, light, sky, war, and protection, all the ancient Egyptian symbols is very important here. So, you know, who is Horus? What does Horus represent?
Well, if you're referring to the ancient Egyptian mythology, Horus was the god who had his moon eye, which is the left eye, ripped out by Set. Well, I mean, first off, there's various kind of interpretations of this, but the one that seems to work mostly with the other research I've found is that they believe Horus had his left eye ripped out by Set, and then Thoth used magic spells of the falcon, which is Phoenix, to reattach it. So the Eye of Horus is a symbol of protection, but when you consider the all-seeing eye and all of these various ideas of this occult belief system of the Illuminati, you'll see that the eye represents various things. It goes all the way back to the Nephilim they talk about in the Bible. And the Nephilim were these offspring of these fallen angels.
Okay.
So supposedly there's this kind of like secret bloodline of people that still have this fallen angel blood within them. And the Watchers were the fallen angels. So the Watchers were, this is where the idea of the evil eye comes in, right?
Okay.
The reptilians and the Archons.
Okay.
And then in the Bible, they also claim that, you know, Adam and Eve were confronted by the serpent, and the serpent promised to open up their eyes. And this is a reference to opening up the pineal gland, the third eye. You know, and the third eye is revered by, you know, a lot of these Eastern mystics and such, like in Hinduism, it's this gateway to the higher consciousness and enlightenment. Same goes with Theosophists. But this eye is kind of like the embodiment of all of these ideas. And the ancient Egyptians were just one group of many in this long line of Illuminati occultists. So that's why you hear about the Egyptians, because they were, you know, obviously a great society at the time. So,
Well, if you dig back even further, Manly P. Hall says the Egyptians actually, their occult teachings actually came from Atlantis. They were predated by Atlantis. And that the Egyptians also embraced black magic, and that's where a lot of this stuff became perverted. But getting back to Horus is the son of Isis and Osiris. And when Rose Edith Kelly received this channeling after they had this ceremony in the Great Pyramid, Rose mysteriously proclaimed that the equinox of the gods has come, and that the age of Horus had begun, and it was Aleister Crowley who was to introduce this age of Horus into 20th century culture.
Okay.
And so that, like it or not, that seems to be what has unfolded here. And you see, that's what, in everywhere you look now, you see the Eye of Horus.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere.
Right.
You remember, Yvonne, we were at the airport restaurant, and the young lady who served us
was
wearing all kinds of occult jewelry and so forth, and she had no clue.
No clue. It even went further than that, but I won't. Yes. I won't bring that up here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But suffice to say, here we have a generation of children out there who are sporting this, all the trappings of the Aeon of Horus, and they have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah, I've got a quote here that I keep handy that supports this idea of, so like we all know that the trend in society right now is to get away from organized religion, particularly Christianity, and to kind of go into a new age of people being what they call, you know, spiritual, which is fine and all. I'm not here to thump the Bible and say everyone will be a Christian, but
right.
You know, it's my belief system, and I'm okay with other people not being that. So let me just get that out of the way. But Aleister Crowley, he wanted to destroy Christianity and organized religion. Mm-hmm. And in the Book of the Law, he wrote this quote talking about this Aeon of Horus that Jim was just speaking of. Mm-hmm. And in it, it says, in this Aeon, the emphasis is on the self or will. Again, the will being that thelema we were talking about earlier. Not on anything external, such as gods and priests. So what this means is this new age is a time of the self-realization of, you know, finding the path to kind of self-deification. And that's what we see in this new age with all the social media tools, with the unprecedented amount of narcissism found in Facebook and Twitter.
Yes.
You know, you got YouTube videos where these kids are like, They're doing very dangerous things,
yes,
hurting themselves, and they think it's funny because they're concerned with the popularity behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk to anyone, you ask them if they're religious, and it seems like most people say no, but they are spiritual. Mm-hmm. And these are all kind of the, you know, this is the byproduct of this new age that we're in, this Aeon of Horus. So yeah, I mean, Crowley was successful in ushering this new age. Most of us don't realize it, and
right.
You know, kind of like the cat's out of the bag already, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you ain't gonna get the can't get the cat back in the bag now. Yeah.
Right. So for those tuning in, if you're not familiar with the primary gods of Egyptian mythology, so that's what we're speaking about. Horus, Ra, Osiris, Isis, Set, mm-hmm. and Apep. Is it Apep, the snake? So I'm curious because just recently, and we were just talking about we're talking about this. Curious if you saw X-Men The Apocalypse?
No, I want to see it though. I actually like those movies.
Holy cannoli. Oh my God.
You saw it then, I'm guessing, yeah?
Well, the first 5 minutes, they're, you know, and I don't want to ruin it for folks that haven't seen it, but I will tell you it takes place in the biggest pyramid, and they're inside there, and there are folks standing around the sarcophagus-like tables, and they're all different kind of powers and race. And the main guy says, "I am the Elohim. I am Ra," and basically was there to take down the structured society of what the Cabal did, but to reintroduce his what it was that he meant from the beginning. Blew me the frig away. I was like, are you freaking kidding me right now? And it just got, it went from that to astral projection to mind manipulation, the whole MK Ultra. It went on and on and on. Anyhow, I recommend you seeing that because we were just talking about the Egyptians, and I could not believe the symbology in this movie. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how they reveal it. They reveal it through the entertainment, kind of. It's all part of that predictive programming where it's kind of easing us into the idea. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, several years ago, you said you believed in aliens and UFOs, and people laughed at you and thought you were crazy. And nowadays, it's not so crazy.
Right.
Nowadays, you've got NASA flat out telling us by the year 2025, they're going to make contact.
Well, it's good. We're already making contact. But that just opened up because Jim Nichols brought up NASA just a little bit ago. So let's ease right into that then. what you were talking about, Nichols.
Well, yeah, let's keep going here.
Yeah.
Gerard Butler just starred in this other movie that just came out. What was the name of it? Gods of Egypt. Crying out loud. I mean, this is like, talk about in your face. They just told you. Gerard Butler just starred in Gods of Egypt, which is the story of Horus. You know, it's this big blockbuster science fiction or fantasy fiction movie. It's like, how how blatant can you make it, you know?
Right. They get utilized, the giants, and the whole thing's about him right. with his eye getting ripped out in the pineal gland.
Yeah, that's true. It kind of tells you the whole story right there.
Yeah. I think the whole pineal gland thing has been hijacked, though. I think that whole idea, from my point of view, it's actually the pineal gland was our uplink to universal consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the archons or whoever, the Elohim or the fallen angels, the archons, knew that. And they knew the only way that they could control the human population was to disrupt that link. Mm. And so they secretly know that the one eye is symbolic of the third eye, which is your direct consciousness link to the universe. And that you have to keep the people stupid and to keep them trapped here in 3D, you have to shut down the third eye. So to me, the Illuminati use of the third eye is that we control the third eye. And if you look, on the dollar bill, if you look at the third eye up on the top of the dollar pyramid there, it's like it's in a box. It's trapped. It's controlled.
Mm.
It's contained. It's like this, we control your third eye. So you can't be connected to God. So this to me is actually the subtext of why this third eye is used. And it's like, it's really laughing at the humanities. Look, we control your third eye. There's not a damn thing you can do about it. Ha ha ha.
So and if you look at the history, so like the occultists, they believe in a different version of human
right.
history than we do.
Right.
And
they
believe in the process of evolution and the idea that this pineal gland mm-hmm. used to be external, kind of like those, you know, those fish that have the little lamp at the top of their head. And,
ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Kind of like a quail.
Yeah. But over time, it evolved and went more internal into our minds, and now it's kind of buried in there. But yeah, like you could be right, Jim. That's a very interesting idea that this pineal gland is the truly the access to this higher form of consciousness, and they do keep it trapped with all of
Absolutely.
The things that we know of in this material world. So
it's like to control the only way to control the only way to control the human race. Is to control the third eye, is to control the pineal gland, which is your uplink. And if you look at indigenous population, indigenous cultures around the world, you can go to South America and you can do an ayahuasca ceremony, which just completely blows your third eye open. And you suddenly see reality. It's like, oh my God, it's like, you see, people who have had these experiences see how completely shut down we are. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why there's been, within the Illuminati Masonic cultures, a deliberate effort to go out and destroy all the indigenous populations around the world because they know the real secret.
Well, and I was reading about the calcite microcrystals.
Mm-hmm.
That the pineal gland is consisting of, and that the complex texture structure of the microcrystals may lead to a symmetry that breaks and possibly does piezoelectricity inside you, so inside your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to remember that your pineal gland they are crystals.
And people claim that the fluoride is, and I don't know that that's true, but the fluoride kind of clogs up your
calcifies
pineal gland.
It.
Right.
Yep. Yeah,
the fluoride, white sugar, flour, everything in our culture is designed to shut down the third eye. So, well, why would they want to do that? Well, to keep you focused in 3D.
Right, and that's
keep you controlled.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. And that's why. So all the metals, remember all the fillings they put, old school fillings, the was it mercury, right?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. when people are raising their vibrations by cleansing their systems and cleansing out their pineal gland through food and coriander extract. In fact, cilantro is one of the key things to break out the metals that is in your pineal gland and to flush that out, and absolutely remove fluoride. There's two types of fluoride, right. So the bad fluoride.
And Miss Palermo,
what
don't you have something on one of your websites all about opening up?
I believe I did a video about how to clean your pineal gland.
So you might want to share with us how people can watch that video.
Oh heaven's sakes! You can Groovy Bean Channel on YouTube. Okay. Go say hello if you like, but hey, I'm talking to YouTube today. Thank you for that.
That is interesting, though, that the I wrote about that in my first book, because that's what actually got me into some of the seedier realms of the conspiracy world, because I was very, I've always been interested in it, but I never truly subscribed fully into it until, maybe when I started the website and before that a little bit, but years ago, I was studying a lot of nutrition and stuff and started to make sense. I was like, oh, okay, all of the stuff, the mainstream stuff that we're sold is all processed and full of genetically modified crap and all this weird stuff.
Poison,
exactly. And that's what it is. It's toxic. And over time, like the mainstream is starting to pick up on this idea now, and now people are going back to more whole foods. So it is interesting that it demonstrates the whole idea of like there's this control system and they're trying to control us, and there's always got to be some kind of grassroots movement to kind of buck it and say, look, this crap's making us sick and unhealthy, maybe don't eat it. We're going back to the natural stuff. And I don't want to get too far off, but you mentioned the NASA thing. With the occult stuff and Jack Parsons being a part of that, because he also tried to kind of widen that tear in the veil that Crowley did when Crowley brought in that spirit of lamb interdimensionally. Most of you guys already know Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology. They did the Babylon Workings, which was the same thing. They were widening this portal, and now we've got NASA who uses all of these same ideas. They give us all of the missions are named after Egyptian deities and pagan gods with names like, Apollo, Orion, Saturn, and the like.
They have a new project called Osiris. Osiris Rex.
That's right. Yeah.
It's like, golly, Rex. doesn't that sound Egyptian to me. Call me crazy, but what?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then I was watching a video the other day, and they were talking a little bit about Operation Paperclip, which was the operation to get these Nazi scientists out of Germany in the 40s, and they brought them to America, and that's, like where we get Werner von Braun. He was kind of one of the main people in rocket science,
right?
And he was, a German Nazi scientist that we brought over.
Totally Paperclip, yeah.
Yeah, and what was interesting on this show, they were talking about the Nazi using the Vril Society. This is another one of these kind of secret societies. And they were channeling ETs. And what they were doing is they were using these women to channel these extraterrestrial entities. Mm-hmm. And they would dictate how to build UFOs. Because, Hitler and all of those Nazis, they had these heavy-duty occult beliefs. And they believed in all these wild ideas of Atlantis and theosophy and all this stuff. And then, what do we get? We get American pilots seeing these UFOs, and then they call them the Foo Fighters.
Right. The Orby guys.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, all of this stuff, it's kind of all the same stuff. It's just everyone's on a different timeline.
Well, do you get the feeling that at some point all this stuff is connected?
Yeah, it's a pretty big tree to put your arm around.
Now, when you were on your show with Richard Hoagland, did you discuss anything about Jack Parsons and JPL and Crowley?
No, we didn't really get into it much.
Yeah.
I didn't make it too long before they kicked me off.
So. I did, yeah. This is really interesting because, I've been doing UFO research for a long, long time. And Hoagland did a presentation, you can watch on YouTube. He did a presentation back in 1997 all about Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, JPL, and NASA.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't stumble on that till about 2 or 3 years ago. And I about fell out of my chair when I listened to it. I thought, oh my God, where have we been? It's like all this time and here's Richard Hoagland is blowing a whistle on all this occult stuff that's at the tippy top of NASA. Uh-huh. And there's a convergence at the top of NASA during the Apollo mission back in the late 60s where you had Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley's black magicians at the top of NASA. You had Nazi SS secret society people at the top of NASA, and you had Freemasons. We had Freemasons riding the rockets, for crying out loud. So it's like there was a convergence of these three powerful secret societies at the very heart of NASA. And it's like what is that all about? And then Hoagland takes it one step further and suggests, well, maybe there was a connection between the assassination of JFK, who was not a Freemason, and because he wanted to reveal the secrets of NASA to the Russians. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a totally incredibly convoluted, conspiracy idea here.
That's interesting.
And then where does Kubrick come in with NASA?
Oh, boy.
Oh, God, Yvonne.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you let the cat out of the bag, yeah. Isaac. But what do you have to share about that?
Oh, okay, so we want to talk Kubrick a little bit. The idea that Kubrick was exposed to all of this. And I gotta give my attributions to Jay Widener. He's the one that I listen to for most of this information.
He's great.
Yeah, he really is. The idea is that Kubrick was approached by NASA or the government or the Illuminati, whoever, and they paid him to film the fake moon landing.
Okay.
And in exchange, they gave him pretty much blank checks to do his movies. And, I guess you could infer that he was kind of okay with that arrangement at first. He did 2001 A Space Odyssey, which has just oodles of Illuminati occult symbolism in it because it's all about Arthur C. Clarke's novel where you've got this black kind of, more or less a cube. It's this black monolith. That represents the blackening in alchemy. It's the same idea that a man can find themselves becoming a god in their own right. Mm-hmm. Through occult teachings. So this man, I forget the astronaut's name off the top of my head, he makes contact with this embodiment of knowledge through the monolith. And originally in the book, he goes to Saturn, but for some reason, Kubrick says he couldn't
do the special effects for Saturn, so they had to settle for Jupiter.
which is so crazy to me, but whatever, that's the official story.
Yeah.
And anyways, he becomes the moon child, which is potentially the offspring of the Antichrist, depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. So Kubrick, he did this film, and then, this is where you can kind of start interpreting different things. At that point, he decided he was going to expose the Illuminati because he didn't agree with what they were planning or whatever. So then you see different ideas showing up in different films. Like in A Clockwork Orange, we see what happens with MK Ultra Mind Control when Alex and his droogies start getting, involved with all of these various, I got something distracting me over here. They get, MK Ultra Mind Controlled. And then in The Shining, we see more of this idea of child abuse and pedophilia, which is something we can talk about in a little bit when we talk about Hollywood.
Yes, we'll do that. How about we do that after the break? Yeah,
that sounds good.
Okay.
And then his last film,
was Eyes Wide Shut.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows Kubrick died shortly after the film was completed, and Warner Brothers pulled lots of this. I think it was Warner Brothers. They pulled a lot of the scenes because he exposed far too much during the satanic kind of sex magic ritual scenes in the mansion.
Kind of makes you wonder, was that a real party?
Well, it's interesting that, Kubrick also, his follow-up to Eyes Wide Shut was to be AI.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and then, then Spielberg completed it.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is kind of a cautionary tale about transhumanism and artificial intelligence, and I think that had Kubrick lived long enough to actually film AI, I think it would have been a completely different movie than what Spielberg did. And I think Kubrick was also concerned that the Illuminati was creating this whole transhumanist agenda. And it was this, I suspect it would have been a warning, a very blatant warning about transhumanism. But of course he died before he had the chance to finish it.
Agreed. I think that's precisely what was going to happen, because that is the transhuman push is definitely the most recent. That I see the Illuminati pushing transhumanism at the same time pushing the alien contact agenda.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's shoved in our faces 24/7.
You got it.
Yeah, I mean, the insanity of it all. So listen up. Was this a good place to take a break for you, fellas?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it looks good for me.
Let's take what would you like, a 4 or 5 minute break, would you like?
Or 5 works for me.
5 works
Five's
for
good.
You? Okay, folks, so listen up. We are going to take a break. We're talking to Jim Nichols, JimNicholsUFO.net, and the one and the only Isaac Weishaupt from IlluminatiWatcher.com. So while we're taking this break, go ahead and check out their websites, folks, and we will be back in 5 minutes. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, this is Isaac here. That was the conclusion of part one of the Groovy Bean interview. Part two is on its way in a couple weeks, so stay tuned. Subscribe to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast. Please leave reviews on iTunes or Stitcher. That helps me kind of craft out what it is that's working, what doesn't work, and what you guys like and don't like. All right, thank you much.
To show you how easy it is to file a claim with Geico, we hired fitness celebrity Billy Blanks.
Okay, everybody, our car just got a broken windshield. How about we blow off some steam? Now punch, now kick.
Mr. Blanks, there's no need to be stressed. Geico makes it easy to file a claim online, on the app, or over the phone.
Yeah, but what if I never hear back? That's going to make me want to go jab and jab.
Nope. Your Geico claims team is always there for you.
Okay, do I still get my post-workout protein shake?
Sure, Billy. Geico, great service without all the drama.
Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you could save an average of $470 on your auto insurance. That's a lot of money in just a few minutes. With savings like that, you could be lounging on an impractical amount of ornate and overpriced throw pillows you bought for your couch. But you won't, because you're better with money than that. That's why you're calling us in the first place. Call 1-888-FARMERS to get a quote today.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Based on average nationwide annual savings survey data July to December 2020, underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or affiliate. Products not available in every state.